You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Saunders back in the lineup for Hamilton as the touchdown in the corner of the end zone. Mazzoli back to the end zone. Tasker, touchdown! Harris stands in, throws over the top. Ellingson can't squeeze it. Tipped again and picked off, this time by Courtney Stephen. On second down, Mazzoli looking for Banks in deep, and Banks makes the catch. Defenders of the football, Pruno and Rose, and Banks has his second touchdown catch of the game.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, after a week off, we're back this week to talk some Ticats football, and we got to talk about the game that occurred last Friday. Bit of a roller coaster contest, if I do say so myself. We had the Ticats jump out to a big 60-0 lead in the first quarter. Then midway through the third quarter, they're down 22-19. Then they're up 33-22 midway through the fourth. And then they allowed Ottawa to score 19 of the game's final 22 points. And Ottawa came away with a 41-36 victory. If this game mattered, Mike, at all in the standings, I think I'd be furious at what occurred. But considering it was kind of a meaningless game, I will have to say it was really, really fun to watch. You get two teams scoring like this. That's a fun football game. It did show us, however, I think, the frustrating side of Ticats football in 2017. We saw a lot of the mistakes that this team made earlier in the season and has made recently in their losses, where they just can't seem to put teams away. It's the one game was against Winnipeg where they put the foot on the throat and never took it off. But other than that, it's been scratching and clawing, and they've won more than they've lost, but they still are finding themselves on the outside looking in at the playoffs. So this kind of encapsulated all that, don't you think?
Yeah, it was sure a fun game to watch. I mean, 41-36, a ton of points being put up. You're right. This team has improved so much in the past 9 or 10 games, but they just haven't found that able. You know, they're not able to close games out as much as you'd like them to do. Yes, they've won more than they've lost in this last half of the season, but they need to find that killer instinct if they want to step up a level and be a playoff team in this league.
Yeah, and if they had that killer instinct, this wouldn't be the second to last Ticats game in 2017 that we'd be talking about. But you're right, they haven't had that extra gear that gets them over the hump. They've won some games, and I'm happy they've won some games, and they've been pretty much since Labor Day every game they've been in, and that's awesome too. But we and you've mentioned this over the years, you're waiting to see this team finally make the jump to a consistent elite team. And elite teams in games like this find ways to put the opposition away. And we didn't see that. And look, the Ticats are their record. They are what they are. They're a 5-win team, and they own that. But as we've said a lot recently, this is a completely different team in the second half of the season than we saw in the first half. And if they can find that killer instinct, this team could be very, very dangerous going forward. So let's jump right into the offense, Mike. When you score 36 points in a game, there are no shortage of things to talk about on that side of the ball. So where would you like to start offensively?
I think we're going to have to start with Mazzoli. A really, really solid game from him. 32 of 46 for 438 yards, 4 touchdowns, and 0 interceptions. He just looked on fire. The whole offense looked on fire in that first quarter especially. And 2 touchdown passes from him, 1 to Saunders, 1 to Banks. And then they kind of, you know, they fell off a bit, ups and downs throughout the game. But to look at Mazzoli's numbers and what he put together, yeah, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, he's been on fire. I think this is his fourth straight 300-plus yard game. To go for over 400 yards is obviously fantastic. But it's the turnovers that I'm noticing. He's not turning over the football. And That's the difference between, and people can say, oh, look, they're 5-4 and he's barely above 500 as a starter and he's 9-9 in his career. I don't look at quarterback wins. I think that that's not a telling stat of how good a quarterback is playing, because it wasn't Jeremiah Mazzoli that allowed William Powell to scamper 40 yards for a touchdown with 30 seconds left. You know what I mean? It wasn't him that couldn't keep Ottawa out of the end zone. The Ticats offense scored 36 points in this game. That should be enough to win more football games than not. So I look at Mazzoli's performance. I thought it was amazing. But to me, the big standard, and the big standard for him since he's come in and started since Labor Day, has been the lack of turnovers. I think he has like 5 interceptions to 14 or 15 touchdown passes. Like that's an incredible number for a guy who was averaging about an interception. Like his touchdown interception ratio was about 1-1, and now he's flipped that. He's almost 3-1, and 3-1 is, that's the elite level of guys in this league. Elite quarterbacks are 30 touchdowns, 10 picks. Mazzoli's at that pace. I know he's a free agent at the end of the year. I said it in my post game piece on 3Down. I'll say it again here. Sign the man, bring him back. He's earned the right to be the starting quarterback for this football team.
Yeah, he's shown so much, and you mentioned the interceptions. I mean, that was a staple of his game in the past, right? You know, you knew that he could perform well, but you also knew that that dumb interception was coming, or the wrong decision on a pass or whatever. But that mistake was going to happen during the game, and maybe a couple mistakes, but he's really taken that away. You look at this game, 0 interceptions, 4 touchdowns. He's just a different player than what he was even earlier on in this season.
Yeah, he did make a couple of, I think, ill decisions. There was the one near interception where he was scrambling to the right and threw it across his body, and 9 times out of 10 that would have been picked off, hit the Ottawa defender right in the hand. So, but even if he would have thrown 4 touchdowns and 1 pick, like you can, it's the ratio. He's scoring more than he's turning the ball over. That tells me he's developing as a quarterback, and that's the thing. This franchise has not developed a quarterback in forever, it seems. They're always picking guys up from somewhere else, and I know they got Mazzoli in a trade after he spent a year in Edmonton, but he's pretty much been developed by this football club, and you're watching him grow each and every game. Yes, there are going to be games where he has setbacks. There's going to be plays, and there's going to be series, and there's going to be drives in the game where it takes a step back. He's not going to orchestrate a 100-yard touchdown drive every time he's on the field. I see these changes, and I look at him in a much more different light than I did a year ago, 2 years ago. Like he's grown tremendously in this role.
Yeah, he came in. This was an opportunity for him. He's a free agent, and he knows it. Came in, and he proved, for the most part, there's been some ups and downs, but he proved that he could be a starting quarterback. He proved that he can win as a starting quarterback. So big thumbs up to him, and I'd like to see him back as well. Now, a guy that he has huge chemistry with has been Brandon Banks, and another huge game for him. 13 receptions, 193 yards, 14.8 yards a catch, and 2 touchdowns. I mean, this guy has been on fire the last 9 games. It's just ridiculous how much yards he's putting up, how much production he's putting on the field right now.
5 straight games over 100 yards receiving. He's 65 yards short of 1,000 yards in the season. And I've made my opinions known. I don't think 1,000 yards is that big a deal, but he's basically going to accumulate 1,000 yards in 10 games. That is impressive. You're averaging 100 yards a game, essentially, at that point. And, man, if he can just – another guy that's a free agent that I just – sign the man. Bring him back. He has proven that he can be an elite-level receiver in the CFL. I don't mean to tip my hand here, but I do voting for the All-Star team. He's going to be one of my East Division All-Star receivers. I know there's not a ton of guys out there that you can really pick for the team, but Brandon Banks has absolutely earned an All-Star designation. He has been phenomenal over the last 9 games, and he's 60, like I said, 65 yards shy of 1,000. He's got 1 game left to go. I can't wait to see him get that in Hamilton on Friday, and the crowd's going to roar in appreciation because he's been the team's best player since Labor Day, no doubt about it.
Yeah, and big thumbs up to him for, I remember earlier on in the season, he had the case of the dropsies a bit, and he really bounced back from that. He got his confidence back. He just put it behind him, and now it seems like he's catching everything thrown his way. So, yeah, I think that Brandon Banks is probably going to get a sizable contract, maybe the contract that he originally got from the Ticats, you know, before he took that pay cut. or maybe even more. He's more valuable now to the team, I think, as a receiver. I mean, just on the field more, right?
Yeah, he could theoretically go back and do returns as well. We saw him do returns in this game a couple of times. We've seen him in the past when they've looked for a spark on returns. They've thrown him back there, but he is a receiver now, and he should be paid like a top flight receiver. He's going 65 yards for Brandon Banks in a game is nothing. And in a game that's going to be meaningless against Montreal, I can't imagine him not trying to feed him the ball to get him 1,000 yards. You know what I mean? Like it's just been night and day with this guy this year. Don't you recall earlier in the season, we were fielding questions about whether the team should even keep him around. Like, will Brandon Banks be cut by Labor Day? And we were sitting here going, I don't know, maybe he could be, because he wasn't performing in the return game. Could you imagine if this team would have cut? Look what we would have missed out on if this team would have cut bait with him. They stuck with him. They changed his role when they changed coaching staffs, and it's absolutely paid off.
Yep. You know, and you look at the receiving numbers, and I'll call them the big three, even though in stature they're not really big at all. But you had Banks, Tasker, and Saunders, top three receivers for the Ticats. Tasker had a huge game as well. I mean, 139 yards. And a touchdown. Saunders, 96 yards and a touchdown. So, I mean, if we can keep those three guys together and maybe add some size in the offseason, that's a pretty scary receiving corps.
How does this this receiving unit sound to you? Brandon Banks, Luke Tasker, Jalen Saunders, accompanied by Andy Fantuz / Shamad Chambers, because Chambers will be back next year. He's got a year left on his deal. I think Fantuz should come back. If Fantuz is going to play, I believe he will play with the Ticats. And at number five receiver, the guy that we don't talk about because he's been missing since the second play of the season, Terrence Tolliver. There's your height in Fantuz, Chambers, right, and Tolliver. There's your 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", guys with your speed demons in Banks and Saunders, and then you got your guy going across the middle in Tasker. That's a pretty scary fivesome, don't you think?
That is a fivesome that I'd want on my team, and I hope it goes forward. And speaking of another fivesome, I am in love with this offensive line right now. I mean, they are just doing a magnificent job. I believe they only allowed one sack in this game. It's just so beautiful to see a nice pocket for a Ticats quarterback.
Yeah, Mazzoli has time. It's not something you notice as you watch the game, I don't think, a ton. I know you've been paying attention to it all season. It's sort of been your thing, I think, since day one of this season. You've been talking about offensive line, offensive line, offensive line. But when I cut up the audio to do the intro, a ton of times I'm hearing them, Mazzoli's got a great pocket. Mazzoli's got a great pocket. Mazzoli with time back there. It's like, oh, I'm not used to hearing this. But, yeah, you couldn't be more right. Once they sort of solidified, and, again, we sound like broken records when we say this, but once they solidified that unit with Washington on the left side and Matthews on the right, it sort of just all came together. This is four of those five guys are coming back next year. Tony Washington is a free agent. And once the season's over, we'll talk about our who should come back and stuff like that. But bring Tony Washington back and keep that group together. Yeah. From the start of a season, man, I'm excited thinking about it.
So I'm excited thinking about the run possibilities, about all the time. There's a lot of positive things to think about for next season for the Ticats. And speaking of the run game, I mean, Alex Green, not a huge game, 9 carries, 47 yards. But he did have that one run that was about 20 yards that, that he can do. He's a good running back, and we'll see what happens with him going forward as well.
Yeah, I think if I had to pinpoint a negative from this game offensively, it would have been sort of they got into that Ken Austin – getting out of the run game. Like, only 9 carries for Green, 46 pass attempts for Mazzoli. Now, Mazzoli was on fire, so I understand. You're riding the hot hand. It's working, so you go with it. And look, and you mentioned the receivers' numbers. Like, two guys over 130 yards, Banks nearly 200, Saunders almost put up 100 himself. Like, they obviously game-planned this because they thought that they could exploit Ottawa's pass defense. But you're right. Green ripped off a couple of big runs. He had the 19-yard run, the one you're talking about, 5.2 yards per carry. Like, he's still a good back. His numbers weren't there this week. I wish they would have run the ball more. Maybe that would have taken more time off the clock, which wouldn't have allowed Ottawa to score late in the game. But, you know, you can't really pick at that because you never know what changes to the philosophy or changes to the game plan or play calling, what that domino effect would have been. But, yeah, this was sort of the first time since Jones took over where I thought the running game was kind of an afterthought.
Yeah, he's been pretty good with the balanced attack, but he went away from it a bit this game. But there was a certain play I wanted to talk about. It was, I believe it was in the third quarter, maybe in fourth. I can't recall, but it was second and inches for the Ticats. They do a play action to the running back and throw deep to Banks. It's a huge play for them, and I love seeing that. We used to see that a lot back in the day when I was a kid watching it. You don't see it enough anymore, and I'm just glad that June Jones called that play because, second and inches, incomplete pass, whatever, you can still go for it at third and inches, and it's pretty much a guarantee. Not all the time, but I just love that play call, Josh.
Oh, I'm right with you, Mike. That's one of those ones I very nearly stood and applauded in my. I was watching the game by myself. I nearly stood up and applauded because I love when coaches. It's not even really a gamble. I don't want to call it a gamble, but when they think outside the box and they try to win the game. That was a play where the Ticats were trying to win the football game. They weren't playing not to lose. They were playing to win. And that stuff, even when it's not successful, I like that being commended because that takes guts. There's a lot of coaches out there that will take the easy way. They would have plopped it, like you like to say, taken the first down and gone for it. They picked up a big chunk play on that one, and it set the offense moving forward. I think they, I'm not sure if they got a touchdown or field goal off that drive, but I know they scored points. And I just love when coaches are not afraid to do stuff like that in an effort to win a football game. That to me, one of my favorite plays of the entire game.
Absolutely. I think that's about it for on the offensive side of the ball, unless you have anything else for it.
I got nothing, so let's move on to the defensive side here, Mike. And the Ticats surrendered 41 points in this one, so there's not really a ton on defense to talk about in the positive way, but there's one player absolutely that I do want to single out here, and that's Don Unamba. I thought he had a fantastic, fantastic game. He looks to be another one of those gems that this team has discovered over the second half of this season. He's been in that secondary. He's been playing well, and I thought this was kind of his breakout game. He's bounced around the league a bit. He played in Winnipeg in 2014, Saskatchewan in 2015, and he's with the Alouettes earlier this year before they let him go, and he found a home here in Hamilton. And man, three tackles in this game, a forced fumble, and an interception. We could have been two interceptions. We'll get to that a little later when we talk. I want to talk a little bit about refereeing, but we'll get to that in a bit. I just think that he has played really well the last few weeks, and that just continued against the Red Blacks on Friday.
Yeah, it's funny how all of a sudden we have some young, talented, promising defensive backs. It's really good to see considering what shambles it was in earlier on in the season. And I'm just looking at these stats here. I'm wondering how the hell did we lose this game? I mean, Richard Leonard had a pick, Uwamba had a pick, Courtney Stephen had a pick. Larry Dean had a fumble recovery. Simone Lawrence had a forced fumble. Guamba had a forced fumble. Tracy had a forced fumble. It's like, what? I just don't know how we lost this game with all those turnovers.
They won the turnover battle 5-0 and lost the game. It's
Yeah.
almost unfathomable that you could
Right.
win the turnover battle that well and still come out with a loss. And I think there's going to be two players in Ottawa that I think absolutely shredded the Ticats, and it was Deontay Spencer and William Powell. Spencer did the vast majority of his damage on special teams, and we'll get to that in a second, but he did have 9 catches for 133 yards in this game. And Powell rushed the ball 17 times for 133 yards himself, including the game-winning touchdown with 31 seconds left. And on that play, it just looked like the Ticats defense parted like the Red Sea, and Powell just ran and took it to the house. Like, those two guys almost single-handedly each willed this Ottawa team to victory. And when you look at you rolled off the numbers, 5 turnovers, forced fumbles, sacks, the defense played well, until they didn't, and they were kind of sloppy at the tail end of this one. And we've seen some sloppy D from this team the last few weeks during this sort of renaissance at the end of the season. We've seen some regression. Again, it's Ken Austin used to say it's not a linear travel of improvement. It's there's ebbs and flows, and there's ups and downs. We kind of saw that. But even with the loss, even with unbelievable plus five turnover differential, the building blocks, I think, for this defense are there for the future. And as odd as it is to say about a team that's 5-12, I'm excited about next year, Mike.
I'm excited too. I mean, you look at we know that every player isn't going to be back, obviously, but there's a lot of potential at a lot of different positions, offensively and defensively. So, yeah, I'm excited for next year, too. I think that if we can bring back, like, the big question is obviously with quarterback, but, you know, that's a conversation for a different time. But if we can bring back some of these pieces, these important pieces, I think we can be a contender next year.
I absolutely agree with you, Mike. Special teams-wise, I think we should get into that a little bit. I think it goes without saying that it was a rough night for the coverage units. Deontay Spencer, we talked about him just a wee bit ago, set a CFL record for total yards in a game with 496. 363 of those yards, Mike, came on various types of returns. He had 169 on punt returns, 165 on kick returns, and chipped in with 29 on a missed field goal return. I think it's pretty safe to say that Deontay Spencer had a hell of a football game against the Ticats and was one of the main reasons, especially on special teams, why this team came out with a loss.
Yeah, and it was a bit surprising because this team has shut down some of the best return guys in the league this season. And, yeah, Deontay Spencer just had a hell of a game. I mean, he was unstoppable. He didn't score any touchdowns, but the yardage really, really racked up and hurt this team.
Yeah, and I think what else hurt this team was I wasn't really high on Junior Collins as the return man. He had just 83 yards on 5 returns with a long of 21 kickoff returns, that is. He was steady, and he didn't turn over the ball or anything, but I think in a game like this where Ottawa got just superlative returns from their special teams unit, that Hamilton needed to match that, and they didn't even really come close. This was the special teams battle was tipped heavily in Ottawa's favor. They started off with great field position, and because of that, well, the game-winning drive. Spencer took it 30-something yards to near midfield, and that helped Ottawa march down the field and score the winning touchdown. Like, it just, Ottawa had great field position, Hamilton didn't, and in a game where 5 points was the margin of victory, you look at some of the returns and think, well, if they would have started a little closer, could they have got a field goal out of it? A couple field goals, you know what I mean? So, I know that we had some tough times at returns with Banks. I thought we saw some really great stuff with Altman, and unfortunately he's injured, so obviously that's why he wasn't in this game. But Junior Collins as a return man, I don't think that's where this team should be going in the future.
No, you just watch him return, and he just doesn't have it. You don't see that breakaway speed, you know, that vision to see the hole and make a big return. But I guess they were just giving him a shot. Maybe we'll see a different returner in the last game.
Maybe. To put a bow on this, though, before we wrap this up, I got to talk about the officiating in this. I try not to hammer the officials too much because I do think, for the most part, that they do a good job. But I was not enamored with the officiating in this one at all, Mike. I thought there were a number of calls that were outright missed or borderline at best. They missed an obvious illegal procedure call on Tony Washington on a third and short late in the game. I saw it live, and they showed it again on replay on TSN. You're like, yeah, he got a jump there. There was an illegal contact call that came on Shamad Chambers where it looked like Chambers actually just two-hand shoved the defender out of the way. And that, to me, was – I don't like that being called anything. If at worst case, it should be called offensive pass interference. I didn't entirely love the PI challenge on Brooks, on the Spencer. He bumped Spencer, and it was, I guess, in a way, pass interference. I just – that, to me, that sort of incidental contact that – both players going for the ball type thing, I don't like when that's called. But to me, and maybe you agree or disagree, I don't know, we haven't talked about it, the big one to me was the overturned interception / fumble by Don Unamba. It looked close, very close to being a catch, an interception, fumble, recovered by the Ticats, or an incomplete pass. And the call in the field was an interception, followed by a fumble, recovered by the Ticats. I feel like it should have stayed that way. And I think... Mm-hmm. If you remember back a couple of weeks ago, the Ticats got a fumble on a Marque McDaniel catch where it was he caught it, put 2 feet down, gets popped, the ball comes out, and they recovered the ball, and it was Hamilton's ball. This felt very similar to that. And, like, heads-up play by Greg Ellingson, good for him for getting his hand in there, because if he didn't get his hand in there and Unamba got a clean shot at that, he was taken out to the house, and that might have been the end of the game. I just didn't like that they came back and they overturned that. It felt to me like – I didn't know either way whether it was or wasn't, and those are the times I feel like they should stay with the ruling on the field, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. And with the – I've seen that a couple times where the receiver, it appears anyways, just blatantly runs into the defensive back, and it's DPI when it should be offensive pass interference. I mean, it kind of bothers me that that gets called. I mean, it, I guess it's tough to tell when live action's going on, but the advantage is obviously swayed to the receivers in these incidents.
I saw someone comment online. I don't know who it was. And I don't know where it was. Some, I don't even know if it was a CFL game or an NFL game or a college game, but there was a call of pass interference, and someone commented that if the roles were reversed and the receiver did what the DB did, it never would have been called offensive pass interference. And I think that's a good way of kind of looking at pass interference from a defensive standpoint, where if you flip the script, and if the offensive player were done, the defensive player would have been pass interference. No, then it probably shouldn't be defensive pass interference. I thought that was an interesting way, and a way that I'm going to be looking at pass interference calls in the future.
Yeah, it needs to be better monitored, I'd say, because the receivers are getting away with some stuff here.
I agree. But I think we should also make clear we're not blaming the officials for the loss. We're just pointing out, I think we should, and I think everyone should. There was some missed calls here, and I brought up blatant missed calls that went in the Ticats' favor. So we're not blaming the officials for this loss. We just wanted to talk about it. I wanted to get your opinion on it. I wanted to get my opinion out there. So let's move on. Last thing this week, Mike, for this game, we got our glorious player of the week. Mike, it's your turn to do it. Who are you handing the award to this week?
There's a couple candidates this week, which hasn't happened a ton this season, but I got to go with Brandon Banks. It was either Banks or Mazzoli, but I'm leaning toward Banks. He had 13 catches, 193 yards, 2 touchdowns. The guy is on fire. He's the best receiver in the league right now. You know, if you look at his numbers, the last 9 games, he'd have to be number one. So Brandon Banks gets my player of the week.
How great was that second touchdown catch where Mazzoli split 2 defenders deep? Like, it was a beautiful throw and a beautiful catch by Banks. And it's just one of those things where, man, if these guys can get together for a full 18, what magic could they produce? We've been talking about Brandon Banks for weeks now, and how we talked about him earlier in this episode, how happy we are with him. But yeah, I don't think there's really anyone that's more deserving of player of the week for this week than Speedy B. So let's move on. Let's put that game in our rearview mirror and talk about the future. We're going to talk some Ticats news to kick things off. And a little thing from here in Hamilton, the Ticats announced that they are going to freeze ticket prices for the 2018 season. And I personally, I'm a Ticats season ticket holder, and I already think that I get great value for what I pay for. I pay about $44 per game, which I don't think is anywhere near an unreasonable price for a professional sporting ticket. And personally, I've been expecting my tickets to rise to above or around $50 per game since they announced they were building a new stadium 6 years ago. And we haven't got there yet. I still pay under $500 for 11 Ticats games. That includes the preseason and a postseason game. I just think that this is great value, and now they're going to freeze ticket prices going into next year. I personally don't think the Ticats had to do this. I don't think anyone would have batted an eye if they would have raised ticket prices. They've raised them about $1 a game since I've been a season ticket holder per year, and I don't think that's unreasonable, but I think it's really cool that they did this. And I know some out there will look at this as a negative, and we had people, if you recall, when the Ticats gave out free tickets following the Labor Day Classic because of the rain delay, people turned that into a negative. Oh, they're only doing this because they don't think anyone's going to show up to any games and all that other sorts of stuff. But I don't think there's any negatives to be found here. I just think this is a good move by the organization, and I'm happy my tickets won't be going up in price next year.
Yeah, it's a great thing. Let's be honest, this team has taken some hits this year in the PR department, and they're trying to make it up to the fans, I think, anyways. So anything that can make the fans happy, I'm all for.
All right, let's do some fun stuff here now, Mike. Ticat Player Award ballots went out last week on Wednesday, I believe. I am one of the fortunate 6 in Hamilton. They get to vote on who the Ticats Player Award nominees will be. So I made my picks and submitted them last Thursday. Didn't want to take too long, although part of me is a little bit regretting who I picked as MOP after what we saw on Friday night, but I'll stand by who I picked. So I thought it would be fun if you and I got together and you got a chance to give your opinion on who you saw as the Ticats' most outstanding player, defensive player, so on and so forth. These nominees will be announced on Wednesday, so they'll be announced about a day or so after this show airs, and we'll come back next week and talk about who won the awards and see how closely our predictions or our picks match what the Ticats, what the rest of my voting brethren actually picked. So let's get into it. Now, when you vote on these, you get to pick a first and a second choice. So I asked Mike when I sent out an email to him. I said, can you pick one of each? Can you pick a first choice and second choice? I think we should start with most outstanding rookie, because I think this is one where we're definitely going to be in agreement here. So, Mike, who is your first and second choices for Ticats' most outstanding rookies this year?
Got Richard Leonard as my first choice and Matthews as my second.
Oh, you went with Matthews as your number two, eh? Okay,
so, I did.
Okay, I went with Justin Vaughn as my second pick, mostly because fifth-round pick, wasn't expected to play a ton this year. He's played in every game. He has a couple of sacks. I can't fight you on Justin on Riker Matthews, though, because, A, you're the offensive line guy, so obviously you're partial to him. But also, he has been stellar. But Vaughn, I think, and this is sort of foreshadowing who I picked for MOP, Vaughn has been really good the whole season, and Matthews really only played the second half. So, but I can understand why you'd go there. Richard Leonard, why'd you pick him? I think it's a no-brainer, but why don't you tell her?
Yeah, he's just been solid all year. Like, even earlier in the season when the secondary was getting torn apart, he was the only bright spot. This kid has been balling out all season long, and that's why he's my pick for most outstanding rookie.
And we can't forget that he's been doing work on special teams as well. If we can recall all the way back into June, week one of the season, Ticats at Argos, it was Richard Leonard who scored this team's first touchdown of the season off the Will Hill blocked field goal at the end of the first half of that game. So he has been putting in work all across the field. And look, I don't have to go into why I picked him. Mike, you said it the best, and he's just been outstanding all year. And I think he legitimately has a shot at being the East nominee and maybe even winning the overall award come Grey Cup weekend, but we'll have to wait and see. Most outstanding special teams player, Mike, where'd you go there?
I went with Castillo. You know, he got injured, and, you know, he's been out for a while, but when he was in there, he was top notch. He made pretty much, you know, not all of his field goals, but a very high percentage, and I was very impressed with him. After, you know, the off season, I was really concerned about the kicking, and he showed me that I shouldn't have been worried.
Yeah, I took Castillo as well. It sucks that he got hurt, because I think he's a guy who also would have had a legitimate shot at being the East nominee and maybe even winning the overall award. Although I think Roy Finch out in Calgary is probably going to win this award. I think Castillo had a shot. He was stellar when he was on the field. It's just a damn shame that he got hurt. Who was your number two choice?
See, I had a very tough time with number two. I couldn't even think of a number two.
Okay, so I went with Jay Langa, and he is – you don't normally see cover guys get their due when it comes to this award. We did see Mark Beswick a few years ago win the East nominee for Most Outstanding Special Teams Player, but you don't really see cover guys. And to me, I came down for my second pick between Langa and Connor McGough, and I thought both of them – McGough being a rookie, I think he's been great on specials. Langa leads the team in special teams tackles. He's been sort of that glue guy on special teams in the coverage units who, outside of this last game against Ottawa, they've been fantastic, especially through the second half of the season. You mentioned earlier that they've some of the return men that they've been – Chris Rainey, they hemmed in. They hemmed in Adeleke against Calgary. They've just done a good job, and I think Langa – deserved at least that part, that a little bit of due. I don't think he ever would have overtaken Castillo because of how good he played, but that was my second choice. So next up is most outstanding offensive lineman. This is always a really, really hard category to pick. So, Mike, who were your two top guys? Who was number one and who was number two?
I got Ryan Bomben, number one, and even though he hasn't had a ton of time, I got to go with Riker Matthews again. He just impressed me so much. You were high on him, and like as soon as he started playing, you had the eye out for him, and you were right, man. He has been spectacular. He's my number two pick.
Yeah, I went with Bomben as number one as well. I think when it comes to offensive linemen, the less you hear their name, the better. And have you really heard Ryan Bomben's name at all this year? Even when the team wasn't doing well, did you really hear anyone talking about Ryan Bomben screwing anything up? Not really. And because of that steady presence, I think he gets that. I can't fight you on your Matthews pick, but I went with Mike Filer. Again, another guy who you didn't really hear his name all that much this year. And even when the team was playing poorly, he was still that guy in the middle there. And I think he's one of the most underrated players in the league. I don't think he gets anywhere near the due that he deserves. But I will say that I debated between Filer and Matthews, because for a rookie to come in and play that well, that says something.
It does, because I remember the rookies that were put in at tackle through the last year or two, and they maybe had one game that was good, but they did not perform nearly as good as Matthews has. So, yeah, for a guy to just come in, his first sniff of professional football, to contribute to this team like that is outstanding, and that's why he is my second pick for most outstanding lineman.
All right, Mike, most outstanding Canadian. There's a few guys here. It's without a receiver really putting up big numbers, this sort of becomes a little bit of a crapshoot, but there's some guys to pick here. Who were your nominees at most outstanding Canadian?
I got Capicotti as number one and Bauman as number two. Capicotti, like, even when Capicotti was more of a rotation guy, he wouldn't get in that often earlier on in the season. He just made plays every time he got on the field, and the more you played him, the more plays he made. And I just thought that he had a really good bounce back season from last year, and showed that he can be a starting defensive lineman in this league again.
So we're in lockstep. I took Capicotti one and Bauman two, so there's really not much more to talk about there. We don't really need to talk about Bauman because we just fetted his resume earlier. So I guess we can move on now to most outstanding defensive player. This, I think the number one was obvious. I think your number two, there's a lot of guys you could have picked from. So Mike, who'd you take here?
I got Larry Dean, number one. And as my number two, I got Richard Leonard. He's just, you know, Dean's been steady Eddie all season long. He's been that guy that you can depend on in the linebackers. And Leonard is just, you know, has impressed me all season long with the knockdown passes and the interceptions and then just the overall good coverage in the secondary.
Yeah, so I too went with Dean at number one. You mentioned it. He's just been solid all year. He's been a dependable player. Maybe that doesn't make him outstanding, but he's been the guy on that defense that you can count on year in, like the entire season, game in, game out for the entire year. Number two, I very nearly went with Leonard, but I like to mix this up a little bit. I went with Davin Coleman as number two because I think for a guy to come in, a little bit of an unknown, replacing a guy like Drake Nevis, who replaced a guy like Brian Hall, the Ticats have had this rotation of American defensive tackles. He's come in and he's made life miserable for opposing quarterbacks. And we can run down the laundry list. Jonathan Jennings, Ricky Ray, Trevor Harris. Like, he's beat guys up. And maybe his numbers aren't out of this world, but he's a defensive tackle. And in a year where Ted Laurent did not play a ton, I think Davin Coleman stepped up and played a hell of a role in the middle of that defensive line. So he got my second nod there. Big one, Mike.
Yeah, he's a hell of a player. I mean, he's a beast in that middle. And I think he got a couple good shots on Riley, too. So, and not dirty hits either. It's just he's just hitting quarterbacks hard, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Not at all. So big one, Mike. Most outstanding player. Where'd you go here?
Yeah, that's a, you know, not a bunch of standout players this year for the Ticats. I'm going with Brandon Banks as my number one. I know that it's pretty much half a season for him as receiver, but the numbers he's put up are ungodly. I mean, if he would be on pace for close to 2,000 yards, if not over 2,000 yards receiving, if he played a full season. So that's my reason why I went with him, and then Larry Dean as my secondary pick, because he's solid player.
Yeah, this came down to me, Dean versus Banks. They were my two picks, and if I would have waited until after Friday's game, I very well may have made a different selection. But I went back and forth on this, and what I ended up doing is I took Larry Dean first and Brandon Banks second. And the tipping point in Dean's favor was what you mentioned. Banks has been outstanding, but for nine games. Larry Dean has been amazing for the full season.
But has he been outstanding?
I know, I know. I legitimately, when the ballot came into my email, it was The other ones I was fairly confident. I knew I was picking Dean at defensive player, Leonard at rookie. Like, those ones I was fairly confident on. This one I really did debate, and it just came down to Larry Dean's near 100 tackles, which no Ticat has done since Jamal Johnson almost 7 or 8 years ago now. And Banks, yeah, like, those numbers are spectacular, but it's only on half a season. It's very, very well Brandon Banks, if he continues this pace and comes back next year, might even be the league's MOP if he put up these type of numbers over a full season. But I think in a year where the Ticats, they struggled for the first half of the season, to put it mildly, there wasn't a lot to get excited about. I think Larry Dean's kind of been a rock there for them all year, and because of that, he gets it by a hair.
Yeah, I can't argue that. I can't argue that at all.
Speaking of awards, Mike, we're going to move on to a different topic here. I will pose a question to you that I posed to myself this week in an article for Three Down Nation. Is June Jones a legitimate Coach of the Year candidate, or at worst, is he deserving of the East's nomination for Coach of the Year? What say you, Mike?
He's done a great job, as we've talked about a lot, but I don't think I could give him a nod for being a candidate. There's only two, right? They used to do three candidates, did they not?
Three finalists, but now they do, like, because they did the three finalists, and it used to always come out in like February or March, when they did like some coaching banquet or something, and now they do the two. They do just like the player awards. There's one from the East, one from the West, and it's announced Grey Cup week, which I think is smart. I don't necessarily know if they need to do two, but yeah, it's two guys, and it's announced Grey Cup week, so it's different than years past.
Okay. So with that said, I think I'd have to give the nod to Trestman in the East, just because of the turmoil that went on in the offseason for the Argonauts coming in late. He's been there the whole season, and they're a pretty darn good team right now. So, yeah, I think June Jones has done a hell of a job. I just don't think he could be up for Coach of the Year.
I think, and I will say that I wrote this article before they played Ottawa. Jones had a 5-3 record as coach and had a legitimate chance to go 7-3 over 10 games, which would have put him with the same amount of wins as Rick Campbell, and could theoretically, depending on the outcome of the BC-Toronto game this weekend, put him one win behind Trestman. So if Trestman finished 8-10 and Jones finished 7-3, I really don't think there's an argument to be made against Jones as the East nominee for Coach of the Year, but that's not going to happen. Now, I will say I think this award's going to go to either Dave Dickinson or Chris Jones, and my gut says it's going to be Chris Jones. But I think there's a case to be made for June Jones. Like you mentioned Trestman, he's the only competition for Jones in the East. That's where the votes will be split. It'll either be him, it will be one of those two. It's not going to be either Kavis Reed or Jacques Chaptelain for obvious reasons. And it won't be Rick Campbell. I know, surprising. Although I'd love to see the breakdown to see if anyone actually did vote for one of those two, although I don't think anyone would.
I've seen some quotes from Kavis Reed lately. It's like he's on another planet or something.
Yeah, did he get a thesaurus for like some holiday? Because he's throwing out some really weird things. Yeah, I saw those too. It was very, very strange.
I remember last week, I think we talked, or 2 weeks ago, we talked about if Alouette should bring back Kavis Reed, and I said yes, but after seeing some of those quotes, I don't know, man.
fair enough. So
anyways.
Yeah, here's the thing with Trestman. If the Argos finish 8-10, yes, he will have improved them by three wins. He will have got them into the playoffs. But 8-10 and you're a Coach of the Year nominee? That seems, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like that wasn't really an answer. But you know, like 8-10. Now if they finish 9-9 and they finish first, I think he probably should and will be the guy. I just look at Jones's resume, and again, it comes down to the whole season versus half season thing, right? And with the Argos too, I think a lot of that not so much goes to Trestman, but it goes to Ricky Ray being healthy. Don't forget, the Argos last year were 4-6 before Ray got injured on Labor Day, and that's when they really tanked. They went like they finished 5-13, so they won one game their last eight games of the year. That's when they really hit rock bottom. Like if Ray would have been healthy, they would have still been in the playoff hunt, even without bringing Trestman in, you know what I mean? So I don't know how much credit you can kind of give Trestman and you know, a little bit lesser to Jim Popp for really turning it around. If Ray's healthy last year, I think Milanovic and them are probably around the 7-8 win mark too. But I do think, like, look, I'm not saying the case for Jones is a slam dunk. I'm not saying he should be the East nominee. I'm just saying, like, first off, can you actually believe we're talking about the Ticats head coach being a coach of the year candidate now? Can you imagine if we said this back in August, like, hey, Ticats will have a coach of the year. We'll have the head coach be in the running for coach of the year. We would have been called crazy. So just the fact that we're even having this conversation, I think, speaks to the job that Jones has done over the last 9 games and 10th game coming up this week.
He deserves a consideration at the very least, I'd say.
Yeah. So it's been a weird year in the East Division like it was last year. It's been a really weird year in Hamilton. So I don't know. I thought this would be a fun thing to kind of talk about. And I think it's Jones or Trestman. And I think we both kind of agree on that. Now we get to the fun part. Mike, we're going to talk about your absolute 100% favorite topic, expansion to Atlantic Canada. And I know you love talking about this so much, Mike, that I'm going to let you go first. But we got to get the reason why we're talking about this out there before I can let you go off. Normally we talk about expansion, and it's because fans are clamoring for that 10th team, right? The commissioner, Randy Ambrosi, did an interview with Post Media's Ted Wyman and had this to say about expansion to the Maritimes. We've been talking about it for too long, so it's time to do it. Everybody wants to see a 10th team. Everybody wants to see us have a partner out east, and Halifax is the community everyone talks about. As I've said to the governors, it has to be done smart. It has to be a creative business model where it's financially positive to all. I think we can do it. Now, Mike, as our resident expert on the Maritimes, thanks to your time spent out in PEI, and as what I think could be colorfully classified as an ardent skeptic of Atlantic expansion, does the fact that the commissioner, not fans, the commissioner, has spoken so strongly about this change your mind that a 10th team based in Atlantic Canada, specifically in Halifax, could actually happen?
No. I mean, it's all well and good that he wants to do it and he thinks it's possible, but the steps have to be put into place. I mean, the ownership has to be there. The government needs to build a stadium, or whoever's going to build the stadium. I don't think it's going to be private money. You know, it's just, there's so many hurdles to get over. And yes, I'm a skeptic. I don't think it'll ever happen just because we've been talking about it for so long. But if it does happen, I would be the happiest person in the world. I would love it. I mean, I could go visit the family and PEI and go over to Halifax and catch a game. I would have a soft spot in my heart for that team. Now, they wouldn't be my number one. Obviously, it wouldn't even be close. It'd still always be the Ticats. But I would have a soft spot for that team, and I would love them to be there. I just don't see it happening ever.
Ever. Obviously, you want it to happen. We all want it to happen. The commissioner said it himself. Everyone wants to see this happen. The only reason that this gets me even slightly more positive about it is we've never heard a commissioner come out and say this. And Randy Ambrosi has done pretty much everything that you think a guy should do well. He has accomplished. And this is the first time he's really taken this sort of aggressive stance on an issue that's not like people were out there talking. There wasn't this groundswell of let's talk about expansion. In fact, the times we've talked about expansion, every time we're like, this is the last time we're talking about expansion, because until something concrete happens, I don't want to talk about it because it's all a pipe dream. And we both agreed on that. But this is the first time we've heard the commissioner come out and say something like this. He wouldn't say this without knowing something. And I'm not saying that that means, oh, he knows that there's an ownership group ready, or that he's negotiated with the Nova Scotian government to build a state. I'm not saying any of that, but to come out this strongly in favor of something, like this is sort of a reputation-making thing. We talked about it off camera. If this guy was able to get a 10th team, get a team in Halifax, and create a 10-team CFL, he's automatic for the Hall of Fame. But even just to come out and be this forceful, this positive about it, it says that it might be doable. Now, maybe it won't be doable in the next 5 years, but Mark Cohan came out and said, we're going to get back to Ottawa, and granted that city a conditional franchise in 2008. They didn't kick off until 2014. If we got to wait 8 years before this all comes into play, I think it'll be well worth it. I'm with you on the skepticism though, Mike. I'm not arguing with you about that. I just can't believe we're hearing a commissioner who's 4 months into his reign as commissioner be this forceful about an issue that's really wasn't at the forefront of anyone's mind at the time.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. Those are all. Those are good points. And I like his attitude. I like his. You know, we're gonna do everything we can to be better. You know, we're gonna make the CFL as big as possible. I love that stuff. And I hope there is something behind it. I hope that maybe he knows something that we don't know. But I'm a wait and see attitude, and I'm not going to get my hopes up because I have before. And you know, Jay, it's been one of my I'm not sure if I should say dream, but it's been really important to me to have a team out there for so long, and you know, to be disappointed over and over again is just that's why I'm so such a skeptic about the whole situation.
No, and I totally get it, Mike. I'm not. Your feelings are I echo those sentiments, really. I really do. I just think that
hopefully it's different this time around. I'm you know, hopefully it's different, and we can see a team in the next, you know, 10 years. I would have no problem waiting 10 years. I mean, that's nothing.
No, it's not. Considering we've been waiting 30 since since this really became sort of a thing, probably been about 30 years. So if another 10 years will be a drop in the bucket compared to that. And look. Unless the commission, this will be the last time we talk about expansion until the next time we talk about expansion. But if the commissioner's making statements like this, we got to talk about them because that's some pretty big news. So moving on,
the Halifax Hellfish.
That's what you'd go with. That'd be your team name.
Yeah, that's a little Simpsons reference. I like it. It is. I think indeed. It rolled up the tongue.
We'll have to come up if they ever do pick a team. We'll have to come up with a poll on what the name should be before they announce one, because there's some good ones out there.
You know, the purple yellows or something.
No, good God, I hope not. anyway, moving on. It's been a while since we've had one of these, but Mike, it's time to hand out a bozo of the week. Who do you got this week?
I like Bakari Grant, but his bozo like behavior, slowing way down. And getting stripped from behind before he made it to the end zone is the reason why he's my bozo of the week. He knows better. He is a veteran player. He knows just get into the damn end zone and then celebrate. Do not slow down before the end zone. Do not ever do that. And he did it. So he gets my bozo.
Yeah, this is very well deserving. Unfortunately, like you said, we're both big Bakari Grant fans. Obviously, he spent a number of years here in Hamilton, became a very big fan favorite, but that was definitely a lapse in judgment on his part. And to his credit, he has taken his lumps in stride, been on social media talking about, yeah, I made a mistake, won't happen again. And that shows kind of what a stand-up guy he really is. So it's with great hesitance that I allow you or I deem it appropriate to give Bakari Grant bozo of the week. But I think he does deserve it, unfortunately.
Yeah, you just can't be doing that, Josh. Can't be doing that.
Can't. No, you're right, Mike. You're right. Okay, Mike. Game preview time, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but this is the last game preview for the Ticats that you and I will do in 2017. It seems like only yesterday that the season started, and here we are, week 20, Hamilton's 18th game, the final game of the season. Sadly, it is another meaningless game between two teams long out of the playoff picture. Ticats will host these, I'm not even sure struggling is the right word for it, so I don't even know what adjective to put in front of the Montreal Alouettes. They're just I'm not sure if a word in English language exists to describe how bad they've been.
Horror awful.
Yeah, sure, we'll go with that. The horror awful Montreal Alouettes at Tim Hortons Field on Friday night. It's fan appreciation night, so if anyone's on the fence about going, the Ticats are going to be giving out a ton of prizes. And given how this season has gone, both on and off the field, I think a fan appreciation night is much needed. So the game won't really mean much, but it is the last time we will get to cheer the Ticats in 2017, Mike. So what are you looking for out of this one?
I want to see Mazzoli put together another top-notch performance. We've seen it recently. We saw it in the last game. You know, I think he has the ability to tear apart this Montreal defense, and I think we will see that. I want to see Banks go over 1,000 yards. So however many yards he needs, I want to see him eclipse that number and, you know, finish the season off on a really high note. Other than that, I just want to see the offense perform well, you know, move the ball, score points, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, there's the outcome of the game doesn't matter. I'm with you. I want to see Brandon Banks get those 65 yards he needs to reach 1,000 yards just because the man has had a remarkable career resurgence the second half of the season. We've probably talked about Brandon Banks more in the last 5 weeks than we've talked about any other player during any 5 week stretch that we've been doing this show. So, like I said earlier, we fielded questions in the summer asking if Banks should be cut. And now he's turned into the team's best wide receiver, one of the league's best wide receivers. And he was your MOP candidate for the Ticats. That says a lot right there. I really hope that Larry Dean can get to the 100 tackle mark. I believe he has 93. So 7 tackles isn't exactly easy to get, but hopefully he can get there and become the first Ticat, like I mentioned, since Jamal Johnson, to get to the century mark in tackles. And this one is, I can already picture you rolling your eyes at me saying this, but I really hope we see Zach Caleros get some time on the field in this one, even for a little stretch like he had against Montreal 2 weeks ago.
I don't have a problem with that.
Here's why. This is very likely going to be his last game in black and gold. And I think just Zach Caleros in at quarterback, he'll get a nice warm send-off from fans who I still think do really appreciate. Like, he's not getting run out of town like Anthony Calvillo did. I think there was something wrong with him. They made the switch. They went on a wee bit of a run here. I know 5-4 over 9 games isn't exactly what you'd call dominant, but they went on a run here where they nearly pulled off this miraculous comeback to get into the playoffs. And I think a lot of people unduly think that the team was 0-8 because of Zach Caleros, because the easiest thing to do is blame the quarterback when a team's not playing well. I think this will be his last game here. I think the fans will get a chance to give him a hearty round of applause and kind of thank him for his time here, because as bad as it was recently, we can't forget that he took this team to a Grey Cup. We can't forget that this guy was at one point playing as the best player in this league. That all came to an end due to a knee injury. Like, let's not forget the good times just because the last year and a bit have been a struggle for Caleros. Let's remember what he did for this organization. And getting him into the game, I think, would give everyone a chance to do that. And I hope he sees a little bit of playing. He doesn't have to see much. I'm not saying he's got to play a half or anything like that. Let's get him in the game, and let's get the Ticat fans at Tim Hortons Field for the last time 2017 to say thank you to Zach Caleros for what he's done in Hamilton.
Yeah, it's so weird thinking that he's not going to be part of this team going forward. We've talked about it before that he was the guy, man. He was the franchise quarterback for this team for the next 10 years. And strange how things change so quickly, right?
It's a dirty business, professional football. And sometimes you think you know something, and then next thing you know, it's taken away from you. And that was who knows where he would be if on that fateful day in September 2 years ago, his knee didn't get shredded. And who knows what the Ticats would have done, but you can't dwell on the past. And wherever he goes next year, I'm sure he's going to be successful. He's still a hell of a football player. And I know there's going to be fans out there saying, oh, he's going to come back and destroy us. And maybe he will. But I think it is time for him to seek greener pastures elsewhere. And I'm hoping we get one last chance to watch him play, because the years that he was here were very fun to watch.
Could be some interesting quarterback carousal going on here in the offseason.
It very well could be. I think you and I will be talking about the old quarterback switcheroos quite a bit this offseason. Yeah. But before the offseason comes, Mike, we still have to make our final weekly picks for the season. We have got 4 games on the docket this week, as always. First up, we are here in the Hammer, Alouettes at Ticats. Mike, who do you got?
I got to go Ticats. It's just Montreal's were awful, so what can I say?
Yeah, the Owls are terrible. The game means nothing, but I think we saw 2 weeks ago, Hamilton is a much better team than Montreal, even though both these teams missed the playoffs. I got Ticats in this one as well. Second game, this is an interesting one. Winnipeg at Calgary. Now, Calgary's locked everything up and has lost 2 in a row, which is shocking to everyone. Winnipeg still has a chance to finish second in the West, but both Matt Nichols and Andrew Harris are nicked up, and they've already got a playoff spot, so maybe they're not so worried. Like, this is a very strange game where you think Winnipeg wants to win, but you also know that they definitely want to get out of the game healthy. Calgary probably wants to win, because do they want to go on the end of the playoffs on a 3-game losing streak? I don't. This is interesting in a way that I wasn't expecting this game to be interesting. So who do you got in this one, Mike?
Yeah, it's a weird one. Two teams that have been dominant all season long now are limping into the playoffs. Winnipeg with injuries, Calgary with just not feeling it on offense. I'm going to go with Calgary because I want to see a playoff game here at Edmonton. And that's basically the only reason.
All right. I'm going to take the Stamps too. I just think if Nichols and Harris are both nicked up. I don't think that Winnipeg has enough fire. That defense in Winnipeg has been awful the last few weeks. I don't think they have enough firepower to beat Calgary. I think Calgary will want to get a win. I don't think we're going to see the starters in for much of the game, but I think you're going to see them in for a half, and I think that probably should be enough to get Calgary off their two-game losing streak. Now, Saturday kicks off with a very interesting contest between the Edmonton Eskimos and the Saskatchewan Roughriders. Both these teams are playoff-bound, but they're seeding. Both these teams could play in the East. Edmonton could host a playoff game. Or like, no one knows where these two teams are going to end up. So who do you got in this one, Mike?
I'm going to go with the Eskimos. They're the they're probably, you know, the hottest team in the league right now. I think they're four wins in a row. They really started to turn it around, so on defense and offense. So that being said, the Riders are a good team too. I think it's going to be a close game, but I think the Eskimos squeak it out.
Yeah, I think the Eskimos are going to squeak this one out too. This is not scientific at all, but the Esks have been streaky. Seven in a row to start the season, then six straight losses. Now they've won four in a row. If they get another seven-game win streak, you know what that means? They're Grey Cup champions. Mm-hmm. It could easily happen. So, I don't know. The Eskimos look like they've turned the corner after that six-game losing streak. And as good as the Riders have been, 10 wins. They're going to finish the season with 10 wins. And I think if you had told anyone in Saskatchewan that the Riders would finish with 10 wins, they would have gladly taken it. So, yeah, I'm going to take the Eskimos in this one, too. And with that, coupled with the Calgary win, you will be going to a playoff game in Edmonton next week, my friend.
Should be a good one.
All right. Last regular season game of the year, Toronto Argonauts at BC Lions. And Argos win, and they win the East Division and will host the East Final at BMO Field. If they lose, then Ottawa wins the division at 8-9-1 for the second consecutive year, another year of every team in the East with an under 500 record. Mike, who do you like in this one?
I'm going to go with the Argonauts. I just, you know, James Wilder.
That's it.
That's all I have to say. Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. I'm taking the Argos as well. They're coming off a bye. BC got that, like, that, I don't want to say fluke win, but they got that win over Winnipeg last week. That's like their, okay, we're okay type of win. I think there's a big come down this week. I think the Argos go in there. I think they put the boots to the Lions a little bit, and they escape with an East Division title and an East Final home date at BMO Field. Okay, it's question time now, Mike, and you got some. What are they this week?
Okay, this one comes from Hammy Aho. What's your takes on the delay on Jones' announcement either way?
I honestly just think they're going to wait until the offseason to really make a decision on whether or not they want to keep June Jones. I think he's earned the right, and I think we've said this before, to be the head coach next year. Maybe they're also going to give Jones a chance to field offers from teams down south. Maybe he doesn't know yet if he wants to stick around. There's a number of reasons. I don't think it's anything nefarious. I think they're just going to do their due diligence and see what they can do and make a decision there. I don't think there's anything untowards or anything to worry about. I don't think it's that he doesn't want to stay or anything like that. I just think that they're taking their time. They're not rushing anything.
Yeah, these things takes time, right? if Jones has offers, then he's going to want to look at that. I'm pretty sure the Ticats want to bring him in, but you know, contracts take a while to get signed and all that stuff. So I don't think there's anything to worry about. I really hope he's back, because I think if you lose Jones, you might lose the momentum that we had going into the off season. And I don't necessarily think that momentum's, you know, goes from one season to the next, but the offensive scheme would be the same. He would be using Banks in the same way. You know, there's so many things that would fall apart if he leaves, right? So I just hope that eventually we will hear an announcement and he'll be back.
Yeah, I think when you look at it in that, like, you're right. Momentum doesn't carry over from season to season. But I think the Ticats would then have to go out and find someone who the fans could really get behind, because I think with all the garbage that's gone with this team, the terrible start, the Art Briles situation, the Johnny Manziel distractions, the last few weeks, the last 2.5 months, you haven't seen that. You've seen the fans just kind of latch onto this team. So if they were to lose Jones and all the good that he has accomplished over these last 9 weeks, they would really have to hit it out of the park with who they decide to bring in. So it again, it's nothing nefarious. I think they're just taking their time, and they're giving everyone sort of, they're going to get out of the season and maybe give a week or so for everyone to kind of breathe and get their bearings. And then I think we'll hear something one way or the other not soon after that.
Now, this next one is kind of a good lead-in from the last one. It says, it's from FenderGuy69, our buddy. Is it overhaul and total rebuild time in Hamilton, or is it just a few moves here and there to get back to winning?
Well, a lot. Okay, I don't think it's a total rebuild, total overhaul, or anything like that. I think we've seen what this team can accomplish with just a few tweaks here and there. I think this defense is playing pretty well. We've seen some great stuff out of the offense when they made a few key changes. A lot's going to depend on what guys come back and what guys don't come back. That's going to obviously change how this team looks. But they started 0-8, and it wasn't until they lost to the Calgary Stampeders 3 weeks ago where they were out of the playoffs. If this team could have pieced together a couple more wins, they're still in this thing. And I think that tells me if they can keep this core group together, they can bring back sort of this team and as close to as it's constituted now, I don't think there's a lot of holes on the team. I really, really don't. I think they get a whole offseason together. They get a whole training camp together. I think this team could come out firing out of the gates if they look very similar to how they look now.
Yeah, I think it's going to have a lot to do with if June Jones is back. Now, obviously, I'm not in the locker room or anything like that, but I think that this team likes playing for this guy. I think that the offense likes his schemes and his offensive playbook. So we have some free agents, and maybe if he leaves, some of them won't come back. So I think we have a lot of good pieces here, and we can get back to winning next year if the pieces fall into place the right way.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that, Mike.
All right, next one comes from Hammy a Hole as well. Do you believe Austin leaves Cats in offseason?
No, I don't. Unless he absolutely wants to or gets a better opportunity somewhere else, I don't think he will. I think his family likes being in this area. Maybe not being on the coaching side of things will allow him to relax a little bit more. He'll just be focusing on building the team. I don't think we've seen the last of Ken Austin as a head coach or as a coach at some level anywhere. I think eventually he will leave here and become a coach somewhere else. This offseason, I don't see him being fired. I really don't. So I think if he leaves on his own, and I don't think he will. I think he sees the improvement in this team and probably goes, if we can keep this group intact, maybe we can turn this thing around and get to and win a Grey Cup next year.
I think he's gone. This is just a gut feeling, but I think that that Ken Austin is first and foremost, you know, football-wise, a coach. I think that's where he wants to be. He's done the thing with the whole shebang where he was vice president, GM, and coach. I think that maybe he just wants to get back to coaching. I think he wants a little bit of control. I mean, I know that he's the big guy, the VP, but I think he wants to be on that field, and that's just a gut feeling. You've heard the rumors of maybe NCAA opportunities or another team in the CFL. Like I could see him being the head coach of another team in the CFL and maybe bringing Zach with him. So, and I also think that's a lot of minds, a lot of egos going on. If Jones is back, Tillman's there, Austin's in the mix. You know, I just have a feeling that he's not going to be a Ticat next year.
Well, that'll be an interesting thing to monitor as well going into the offseason. You got one more, don't you?
I have one more that is fun, not really football related, but since it's Devil's Night, the day before Halloween, Fender Guy sends us a question. Are you dressing up for Halloween tomorrow? Favorite Halloween candy?
Ooh, favorite Halloween candy? Well, I guess I'd have to say my favorite Halloween candy is the exact same as my favorite regular candy, and that would be Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. And now the all-time favorite trick-or-treating candy, that's when you get the full-size bars or the can of pop. Yeah. The can of pop was always it sucked because you had to haul it around, but man, getting that can of pop was so refreshing when it's like you're eating all this chocolate. Nice can of usually, and I don't know why. Mine was always
chocolate and pop.
Chocolate and pop. Big time.
No way.
I want that sugar rush, buddy. I want to be flying, bouncing off the walls. But yeah, full-size candy bars were obviously always the ones where you're like, oh, we got to go to this guy again next year. Mm-hmm. But if I had just regular, everyday, miniatures, signatures, snack size. It's the Reese peanut butter cup. Nothing holds a candle to the Reese peanut butter cup.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Are you dressing up?
Potentially could be dressing up for work. I'm still working on a few things. I was going to dress up. I was going to try to find myself an adult Flash costume, but unfortunately that was really hard to find. I nearly got a Spider-Man one, but I went and all the Spider-Man costumes I saw, someone had stolen all the masks. So I would have been a maskless Spider-Man. And what the hell is the point of that? So, if I can't find a Flash costume, I may dip back into the old 90s play bag, grab some blue jeans, a crisp white t-shirt, a red fullback Yankees cap, strap a mic to myself, and start singing It's All About the Nookie and go as Fred Durst.
Oh, no. I thought you were going that way. I thought you were leaning into the... I liked Limp Bizkit back in the day, but you look back
gotta
and...
Yeah, got to keep rolling, rolling, rolling,
that was bad. But I'm going to go against the grain here, and I'm going to say Smarties.
Because
they're delicious candy, and I like them a lot, and I don't care what anyone says, they're better than M&M's. But no, I'm not dressing up. I mean, I'm like, 70 years old, so.
You know, if I was willing to take this podcast into a two-hour one from the one and change we're already here, I would debate you and berate you about your Smarties choice. But you know what?
Smarties. Why does everyone hate Smarties?
I just don't like them. I don't think they're as good as M&M's. And there's not as many varieties. You get the M&M, you get the peanut butter M&M, you get the peanut M&M, you get the crispy M&M. Love
them. They don't need to. they got it perfect the first time around.
You know what, though? There's all these food debates. Basically, that is what the internet has become. Should pineapple be on pizza? What do you like about butter tarts? Now all of a sudden people are debating the merits of Dr. Pepper. You know what? Like what you like. Eat what you eat. I don't like Smarties. Mike, you like Smarties. Guess what that means? More Smarties for you, pal. More Smarties for you. And that would make you happy, no?
Well, apparently no one likes Smarties, so I can have them all.
Well, I got to tell you something, man. If no one, it's one of the top 10 selling candies in Canada. So if no one's like Smarties, you're eating a hell of a lot of Smarties, my friend.
Yeah, yeah. Well, every time I bring it up, people seem to gasp in horror that I like Smarties, but it's okay. I'll get over it.
What's your least favorite chocolate? While we're on the chocolate train, we'll extend this just a little bit. What's the one that you are like, if you got it, you would throw it in someone's face? Can I tell you mine?
Yes, you may.
Big Turk. The Big Turk is awful. I don't know how people eat it. It tastes
that's
like a
chocolate
eating...
with strawberry in the middle.
It's not. It's like a it's
taffy type thing.
It's got red stuff in the middle. I don't know what it's supposed to taste like, but I just it tastes like I'm eating cow snot for some reason. I hate the Big Turk. It's the worst.
Not a big fan of molesters or Maltesers.
Yeah, I'm not a big Maltesers guy either.
They're not good to me.
I also choked on one time when I was in the car with my dad and grandfather heading to the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame. So that might be another reason why I don't like them.
That could be a reason, right? Yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah, no, I can definitely get behind the anti-Maltesers bandwagon.
There you go. I don't like them.
All right, now that we've completely taken this from serious football talk to ridiculous candy talk, I think it's time to end the show. So everyone out there, remember, you can subscribe to the show.
Cereal. Nesquik cereal. Terrible. Terrible.
Okay, we have to end this show now before Mike and I get into an internet fist fight. Apple Podcast, Google Play, Stitcher, you can find us all on there. You can download it at 3downnation.com. If you want to ask us a question, both about football or apparently, we'll take your food-related questions too. I love a good food debate, and I think me and Mike are going to have it out after I hang up about Nesquik cereal, but that's another day altogether. Mike, give them your Twitter handle so they can give you your silly questions, please.
Mike_Ticats.
And you can send your ridiculous questions my way at joshsmith_82 or post those food questions in the comment section on 3downnation.com. Mike, episode 93 of Podski Wee Wee is now in the books. I'm Josh Smith.
And Mike Graham, eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.